Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, and this morning's conversation is with Jim Rogan. Jim's the Undersecretary of Commerce for Intellectual Property and the Director of the Patent and Trademark Office. And joining us in our conversation is Tom Romeo.
Jim, we know that the PTO is a performance-based organization. What has that meant in terms of managerial flexibility for the agency?
It's been difficult, quite frankly. The intent initially, when it became a performance-based organization, was to take the PTO off of the off budget, if you will. So it is now an organization. It's an agency that does not receive a single dollar in taxpayer funds. It gets no tax money from the general fund. Where does the PTO get its revenue? It gets it from application fees. The entire PTO operation performs and exists on the fees paid for applications for patents and trademarks. Now, the idea behind that was that we would be able to set the fees based upon what the needs of the office would be. And so if we needed to hire more examiners today, if we needed to train them better, if we needed to pay them more because we're losing too many of our skilled examiners to law firms and to private practice, whatever, we would be able to just do a simple mathematical calculation and set the fees accordingly. But that has not been the way it's worked in real life, because what's happened in the real world is both administrations and Congress over the last 10 years have said, all right, Congress sets the application fee. So Congress, let's just say, sets the fee at $100. That's not it, but I'm just using a round number. $100, and we know we're going to get 300,000 applications this year, and so we can figure out what we can invest in this year as far as infrastructure and training and so forth. But then if Congress or the administration says, oh, by the way, these are tough budget times, and so we're going to take 20% of those fees and divert them to some unrelated aspect of government, whether it's highways or the general fund or whatever, that's what's been going on ever since it became a performance-based agency. Well, that's really ticked off applicants because, you know, they feel like this is a tax on their technology. Hey, I'm already paying all my taxes as a citizen. These fees are supposed to go to getting my application to me, getting my application reviewed as quickly as possible and getting an answer back to me. And now you're taking that money and you're throwing it in an unrelated pot. That's a tax. President Bush recognizes that, and so recently did something that I think the entire user community is very grateful for. He not only cut the diversion, the initial diversion, in half, but he also announced through Secretary Evans the intent of the administration to end diversion. The war on Iraq has kept, you know, budget considerations a little bit iffy right now. Congress went ahead and matched the president even better and cut it to where I think it's the lowest now it's been in 10 years. And so it's my hope that in the near term we see that concept of diversion going away altogether. Having said that, that doesn't necessarily fix the agency. The problems of the agency, if it were a private sector corporation, would be fairly easy to fix. One doesn't have to be a patent or a trademark genius to figure it out. I mean, it's basic math. How much do we need to pay examiners to get them in, qualified examiners? What do we have to pay out to train them appropriately? What do we have to pay to retain them? What do we have to invest for e-government, for electronic filing, and all of the IT needs to bring this out of this 18th century business model under which we still operate and bring it into a 21st century model? Figure out what all those costs are, and then set the application fee accordingly. And adjust it as it need be. We don't have the flexibility or the freedom to do that. Examiners are all federal employees, and so therefore they're under the GS payment schedule. I think our top level examiners, the ones who have the most seniority, the most experience, the most technical expertise, we pay them about $120,000 a year. And that's even after we've sent them to law school, and now they're lawyers too. So law firms come in and just cherry-pick these people and pay them double, so we lose them. We can't raise their salaries because we're stuck in this GS principle, and so we can't do what we need to do to recruit or retain qualified examiners, so we're just stuck. And we can't change our fees because Congress sets the application fee, and then if there's a diversion of 10 or 20 or 30%, we don't get to make up for the loss by bumping up the fees. The fee stays the same. We lose that 20 or 30% of our fees that year. And so what does that mean? Well, instead of hiring 800 new examiners to help attack the backlog, we hire 200. And with attrition, we end up with a net hire of 20. It means instead of going to e-government and e-filing this year, we have to push it off for 2 or 3 more years. And so this has been the problem. Because we don't get to run it like a business, we end up shortchanging the applicants on a regular basis. And so to the extent that within the rules and parameters of government that I can change that, that the Secretary of Commerce and the President can get these changes through, that's what we're working to as a team.
Well, you talked about the complexities of the applications and the skills of the individuals to do them and the fact that they generally can't be paid as much as some others. How do you keep the human capital pipeline full? I didn't see the math work out to anything but people leaving. So how are you addressing the human capital challenge?
Well, one shouldn't underestimate the psychic income that people get in working for government. It doesn't pay as much. I can make a lot more money in the private sector than I'm making now. I think I'm making, as director of the USPTO, what first or second year associate lawyers right out of law school are making at my old law firm. I mean, you know, that I. So, you know, most people aren't in government to get rich off it. Most people are there because they enjoy public service or because it fulfills their needs in other ways. It tends to be for examiners. Not they have flexibility in their hours. It tends to be more of a 9-to-5 job. And if they do their job during the week, most of them don't have to come in on the weekends. There's also, in tougher economic times, more security in federal government employment. And so there are as many reasons for people to stay in government as there are people in government. But to the extent that we can make these jobs competitive with the private sector, survey after survey has shown that we don't have to compete dollar for dollar with the private sector. We just have to be within the range. We just have to be in the ballpark. Because most people would prefer to work for a little less money or even a significantly less amount of money if the quality of life is infinitely better. We offer a much better quality of life and much more flexibility than one is going to get, you know, having to account for every 6 minutes of their day at a law firm. But if we can't compete with double the salary and so forth. And so we do lose a lot of our experienced people, and it just makes it tough. And that's why the backlog continues to grow.
You also described some of the technology that's being brought to bear, electronic filing, for example. I wonder if you could speak more in terms of what that might hold.
Electronic filing is really going to be the key to us being able to move into a 21st century business model. We have an electronic filing system right now at the USPTO. It's cumbersome. It's time-consuming. It's laborious. It interfaces with very little. And so we only get 1 or 2% of our applications filed electronically. People don't like it. And then being government, when they do file electronically, the first thing we do is convert it to paper. And so it, to me, that just absolutely defeats the purpose of electronic filing. As I traveled the country and met literally with thousands of our applicants, from big customers like IBM to independent inventors and garage inventors, most filers in America also file in Europe and Japan. Most filers in America also file for protection in Europe. Uniformly, I heard the European e-filing system is better. It's more user-friendly. It's easier to navigate. It interfaces more. The short answer is people liked their system better. What was the governmental bureaucratic response to that? Well, let's take tens of millions of dollars and come up with a different system that we will deploy in about 6 years. We've put the brakes on that. What I did was I went to the Europeans, actually intending to see if I could work out a licensing agreement with them. I guess I'm a better negotiator than I thought, because the deal we cut was they're giving it to us, basically, their system, and that we will now jointly maintain one system for both offices. And so Americans can now, a lot of companies are holding back. They don't want to file. They don't want to do e-filing because America was coming up with a brand new system and Europe was on a different system. They didn't want to make the IT investment until they knew where we were going. We are now going to be able to go out and say, we're all on the same page here. You know, you only have to adjust to one system. The Japanese are now interested in joining us in this. And I've been traveling around to different countries, basically telling the heads of our sister offices, we are developing this. Why don't you get on board with us? I haven't had a single country tell me they're not interested. And so if this works out the way I hope, Very soon, most of the world, or most of the major intellectual property offices at least, will be on basically the same e-filing system. That will do a couple of things. It will allow American filers, with the click of a mouse, to click and file in multiple countries. It will also allow us, through work-sharing arrangements that we're trying to do with the major intellectual property offices, to share the results of our searches and use their searches that have already been done as the starting point of our searches. That will shave significant time off the overall application process here at home and deliver more quality. So we can cut dependency and improve quality and save money all at the same time by just injecting some basic business common sense into what otherwise avoids common sense sometimes in government.
That's a good stopping point. We've got to go to a break. Rejoin us in a few minutes as we continue our discussion about management with Jim Rogan of PTO. Homeland Security is on everyone's mind. What role will PTO play in the protection of our nation? We'll ask Jim for his thoughts when the Business of Government Hour continues.